Season 2, Episode 1. I came to in a room, one unlike anything I'd seen since the fall. Clean, sparse. Set against its white walls, I saw the grime that covered every inch of me that I hadn't seen in so long. Clumps of dirt, interwoven with matted hair. As for the woman I saw in the trees, there was nothing to be seen. I was atop a table, laid out. The only thing next to me was the book, which I cannot seem to shake, and my bag. I spent many an hour trying to find a way out of the room, which was lit by a single light, so bright that I cannot get close enough to even guess its source. I have no food, no water, but I do not seem to feel hungry. The only thing I can do is read. So, I'll read. Beef Stewart. I spilled some beef juice on the floor and accidentally anthropomorphized it. It wasn't much, just a small splash about the size of a fingernail, but I gave it a name like my parents told me not to. Instead of taking a damp piece of kitchen roll and wiping it up, I got down on hands and knees and gawked at it. I asked it how it was doing, how its family were, and how it felt to be a blob of fat and grease and blood. Then I cleaned up the pots and pans, wiped down the sides, swept, mopped, and when I was finished, I looked down at the shiny bubble of dark red on the floor tile. I wished it the sweetest of dreams before turning off the light and going to bed. The next day, it had a face. Not a fully formed one, just the slightest suggestion, a narrow ridge that could have been the brow, a short point that might have been the nose, and a line cutting across where its mouth would be. The glistening wet skin was firmer today, with purplish discoloration. It was bright with blood and marbled with fat. It looked like a forbidden fruit, left to rot on the floor by the kitchen bin. It didn't smile, this face, nor did it look sad. It didn't do anything. I fried some eggs and bacon and asked it how it slept. Asked it if it dreamt of anything. Asked if it knew it was alive. Asked if its name was Stewart. "You look like a Stewart," I said, and almost as if in response, the line where the mouth would be opened, revealed an empty pocket. "Yes," I said, "Stewart it is." I told Stewart my name, and I thought he replied, but when I asked him to repeat himself, I couldn't hear through the sizzling bacon and eggs and the extractor fan. When I asked him again, he chose not to say anything at all. Later on, I got home from work and the house was silent. My footsteps echoed through the lonely hallway as I turned on the lights and switched on the TV, rolled the volume all the way up. It didn't matter what was playing, those reality TV programs or news reporters talking about bad things, or even if it was just white noise, the channel between the channels. In fact, the channel between the channels might be my favorite of all. If you make it loud enough, you can get lost in it as it pours from the screen, fills up the empty spaces. I was too tired to cook, so I ordered some takeaway from the pizza place around the corner. Meat feast with 3 mozzarella dippers and a can of Coke. I ate on the sofa like I told myself I never would. I have a dining table after all, but it's too big for one person. So, I ate on the sofa and fell down a rabbit hole of YouTube videos on my phone. I watched some about politics, some about cooking, and some that were supposed to make me laugh. Before bed, I put the leftover pizza in the fridge, made some Dreamtime-flavored instant tea, and looked down at the floor to see Stewart staring back at me. "Oh," I said, as the dark hole of his mouth opened, closed, then opened again like a goldfish mouth. His eyes were big and dumb now, They had tiny dark spots where the pupils should be, circled by milky white smudges. He looked at me like a newborn baby might, like he wasn't sure what I was, what this world was, or even what he was. "Hello, matey," I said. "Everything okay?" Another hole opened above the mouth. Smaller, a single sniffing nostril. It flared as he sucked in a teeny tiny breath. It sounded like a puncture I had on my bike tire once. I wished him sweet dreams, went to bed, lay with my laptop on my chest, playing ASMR noises at full volume. In my dreams, there were mouths in my ears chattering moistly, and the sky was the colour of bottom lips and broken blood vessels, and it was the best night's sleep I'd had in ages. When morning came, I woke up before my alarm. I was too excited to go back to sleep, so I ran downstairs into the kitchen and marvelled at how much he'd grown. The red splodge was now a tiny mountain rising from the kitchen floor with a fully formed nose, nostrils, eyelids, and pinprick yellow teeth lining the circle of his mouth. "Morning," I said, and he smiled, or maybe he grimaced. I couldn't tell. His thin, wormy tongue busily explored the gaps between each of his teeth. Then he started to explore. Only when I wasn't looking, though, I'd turn to see him exploring new spots on the floors and walls, always at the end of a slimy trail of ruby mucus. He got big. His features became more defined. He smiled more. Maybe it wasn't a smile, but he did it more. And then the neighbor's cat got into the kitchen. They were called Sally. No, wait. The neighbor was called Sally, not the cat. I tried to say hello to her a few times, even offered to take her bins out on bin day, but she was always too busy, always said sorry because she needed to get back to something, or she was in the middle of something, or she had something going on, even on the days I'd seen her doing nothing. A cat, called Oreo, like the cookie. It had dark chocolate fur and a creamy white belly and paws. I liked Oreo quite a bit. Oreo was never in the middle of something, and it wasn't the first time that he'd gotten into the house. He often came in through the windows and nibbled the flowers on the windowsill. One time I found him asleep on the sofa, and he smelled of tuna cans and pennies. Another time he was pissing on my bathroom mat. This time I found him sniffing Stuart in the middle of the living room floor. I meant to step in, shoo Oreo away, but I was curious to see what would happen. Plus, I didn't want to shoo Oreo away, because then he might not like me anymore. Oreo leaned close, sniffed Stuart's head. I could see that Stuart was in some distress, silently screaming, shuddering like a sculpture of jelly on a shaking plate. But he was stuck there in that spot. I wondered if he might slide away, but he didn't. It looked like he was saying something, but no actual words came from his mouth. I guess because he didn't have lungs or a throat or whatever. Still, I could almost see him mouthing Oreo's name over and over. Oreo, Oreo, Oreo. Each time Stuart said the name without saying it, I heard puncture sounds, ASMR sounds, gas leak secrets. Then when Oreo licked Stuart's forehead, I caved, shooed him away. "I'm sorry," I said, as Oreo meowed and tried to jump up onto the windowsill, but as he went to jump, his back legs crumpled like his bones were made of soggy origami. Then so too did his front legs. Some of his claws slipped away from his paws and clattered to the floor. His tail shrunk and curled in on itself like a burning spider leg. He made awful gurgling sounds as he deflated on the floor, and I went to him, trying to find out if he was okay. "Oreo," I said, holding his shriveling skull in my hands. "What's the matter, Oreo?" I ran my hand over his squishy back and said his name over and over. It was a bit like watching those videos of roadkill rotting away in Fast Forward, and I was already wondering how I was going to explain to Sally that her cat had come undone on my living room floor when he started to firm up. The more I said his name, the more solid he became. I saw his legs rebuild and reconnect, his eyes push out and reinflate, slotting themselves back into their proper positions with a suctioning pop. I picked up the loose claws from the floor and handed them back to him. He gripped them tight within his fluffy white knuckles before retracting them. When he was done, he stood up and purred as if nothing happened. He jumped up to the windowsill, easy peasy. He sniffed the flowers, meowed, then left. I made an aw noise before seeing that Stuart was now also on the windowsill, about an inch from my finger, a snotty brown trail behind him, shuddering and silently screaming at me. "That wasn't very nice, Stuart," I said, and I leaned down to hear his response. But all I could hear was whatever the opposite of white noise was. It was a cold noise, a desolate noise. That night, I woke and was very surprised to see him on the ceiling. His face had blossomed, the edges of him like watercolour paints, his eyes like thick bubbles of pus, ready to pop and drip. A gooey tableau. I wanted to ask how he got there, but he dripped off the ceiling before I could speak. He landed on the pillow, inches from my face. I guess he wanted to sleep on the bed. "Okay, Stuart," I said, "but just for tonight." I rolled to face him, but he was too close to see. He was getting awfully big now. In the blur, his mouth moved. He was singing the same goldfish song. I could see he was mouthing my name over and over. His breath smelled like a forgotten bin on bin day. I went to push him away, but my arm didn't work. I tried to speak, but the muscles in my jaw felt too weak and my tongue too small. I pushed, whispered, "Stuart, Stuart, Stuart." He continued to do the same with my name. Then I felt my gristle, my bones disconnect, that special something that made me, me, seep out through my ears and through my untangling belly button. He continued to say my name, and the billions of microscopic hands holding me together let go, and I realized I was being pulled into the other place, the place where Stuart was from, the beef place. And like lonely children with cups on a string, we whispered, somewhere between alive and not, teetering between worlds, the channel between the channels, together. Beef Stuart was written by Luke Condor and read by Paul Stevenson. Luke is the voice and one of the showrunners of The Other Stories, an award-winning weekly horror fiction podcast with over 10 million downloads. He writes weird, scary, funny stuff in a variety of different mediums. Recently, this includes the incredible bizarro book My Dog Shits Cash, the interactive fiction game You're Going to Die, and a free mini comic book called Toast. In 2015, Luke won the Best Low-Budget Film Award at the London Short Film Festival for a film he made in 7 days with no camera and no money. It was called Keith. Luke is also part owner of the independent story studio Hawk and Cleaver, which brings you the best horror, sci-fi and thriller stories this side of the apocalypse, and he works from a dining room table in the middle of Sherwood Forest. For more, check out lukecondor.com. Bleakwood is a Hollowstone Press production. You can find out more at bleakwoodpod.com. And why not check out Blood on the Motorway, a new podcast version of Paul Stevenson's best-selling horror trilogy, Blood on the Motorway. You can find out more about that and everything else at paulstevensonbook.com. In the meantime, we'll be back next month with more tales from Bleakwood.